Welcome to the Versopolis podcast. I'm Mitya Drap, and today we are talking about poetry communities. Joining me are Emma Woodford and Katja Knežević. Emma Woodford is a Belgian/Brit who is passionate about reading and writing poetry, finding communities of poets, and hosting the occasional poetry workshop. She is a Ginkgo Environmental Prize runner-up and has been published in online journals such as Quarterly and Academy of the Heart and Mind. In addition to being a WordCraft Collective co-founder, Emma is an active member of Poets for the Planet. Also joining us is Katja Knežević, also a WordCraft Collective co-founder, an award-winning poet and short story writer. In 2012, she won the Sea of Words literary competition organized by IEMED and the Anna Lindh Foundation, while in 2014, she won the Croatian National Award, Goran, for young poets within the festival Goran Spring, with the manuscript Staklene Breze, Birches Made of Glass. The collection was subsequently published in April 2015. Emma and Katja, welcome to the podcast. I'm very glad you could join me today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. So poetry communities have played a vital role in the cultural and artistic development of societies throughout history. These communities often served as hubs for poets to share and refine their craft, providing a supportive environment for creative expression. The Greeks had poetry gatherings like the Symposium, where poets recited their works and also drank some wine and engaged in intellectual discourse. Modern poetry communities like the 20th century, like the Harlem Renaissance and the Beatniks, used poetry to express countercultural and anti-establishment sentiments. Today, online poetry communities and social media platforms have democratized poetry, allowing poets to reach broader audiences and receive instant feedback. And the first thing that comes to my mind when thinking about poetry communities are literary workshops. On a personal note, my first poetry workshop happened when I came to study in Ljubljana at 19 and attended the workshop mentored by Uroš Zupan. And for me, this represented a wholly different experience of poetry. Before, it was something I would do from my bed or desk at home, but weekly meetings at the workshop meant that I was suddenly surrounded by a diverse group of people of different ages and walks of life, all coming together in a single pursuit to read poems to one another, to give constructive criticism, and to grow as literary artists. It was also here that headhunting for new voices was made, and many of us published our poems in literary magazines and later even poetry collections. Ljubljana had a diverse poetry scene with monthly readings like Mlade Rime, which translates to Young Rhymes, where anyone could come up and share their poetry with a wider audience. The readings gave a strong sense of community for a lonely student like me, and it is hard to imagine my life without the many friendships I forged along the way by being a part of this community. So first of all, I want to focus on the WordCraft Collective, which is a group of writers meeting in Brussels, which was co-founded by you both. So what exactly is the WordCraft Collective and how did it all start, Katja?
Thank you, Mitya. So the WordCraft Collective is a platform for writers based in Brussels who write in English to meet, to exchange, to not feel lonely, to share ideas and inspirations and frustrations, because being a writer does come with a lot of frustrations in every step of the process, from the first draft to publishing. There's a lot of hoops to jump through, so we wanted to give each other support in that. And it also is a place where we can learn from each other, be it through workshops or just simply conversations. It's kind of a baby, so to say, I'm doing air quotation, of another group that was started 4 years ago, actually in the autumn of 2019, about a dozen of us, so writers who live in Brussels and write in English, met up and started a writers group. We would meet every second Wednesday in a bar called Espérance, which means hope in French. So we even named our group something like the Espérance group, which means to say we write in hope, of, you know, producing something beautiful, in hope of getting published, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So it was started in the autumn of 2019. And we were already from the start a very diverse group in the sense that, well, firstly, most of us are actually non-native speakers of English. There's a handful of natives, but most of us are non-natives. And for various reasons, each person respectively, and personally, we switched to writing in English. Then, of course, there was also a certain gender balance, and most interestingly, a very great diversity in genre we wrote in. So some of us were poets, one person was working on a travelogue, another person was working on a memoir, another person was composing a short story collection, a couple of people were working on a novel. So when we started meeting regularly and submitting pieces of our writing to each other, we would end up getting a very diverse feedback. You know, a poet can give very useful feedback to a novelist, even if it's not immediately obvious on how to, you know, get the most out of language, how to be economical with it. A memoir writer can give a poet a very useful feedback on how to capture emotion and communicate it. So we really experienced a lot of richness out of this diversity. And another important element that I really personally strongly felt was that obviously, so 5 months after we started the group, COVID came and we switched to meeting online only. And at that stage, we also made it more frequent. So instead of meeting every second week, we met every week, every Wednesday, because this was basically our socializing. That was the thing that we could do, and we couldn't meet in person because we were more than 10. That was a drive of inspiration, honestly, meeting every week and talking to people, especially in this context of, you know, fear and loneliness that that the lockdown brought on. At the time, obviously, I enjoyed it a lot, but it was only later that I realized in hindsight what an important lifeline it was. So anyway, it was from that group, then 3.5 years later, that a handful of us decided, you know what, let's make this even bigger. Let's keep the Hope group as is, because it's a unique animal and we got a lot of it. But then let's build an additional thing and open it up to other people and throw in other elements, not just meeting and feedbacking, but other activities that writers might find useful.
Yeah, so this is seen from the collective website, where you can see that it's not only, it's a very professionally done website with like weekly or monthly events, be it only after work drinks, but also like readings, if I understand correctly. So Emma, were you also in this beginning, were you also a part of this initial writers group? And what was your experience of working with the collective? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I joined much later. I joined after the pandemic. I was I started writing poetry in 2017. It was obviously a very sort of lonely pursuit. And during the pandemic, it felt even worse, you know, not being able to contact people, not being able to go out and meet and even look for other poets. Yeah. And I'd seen the one call go out for when there's an open space in the Esperance group. So I thought, why not give it a try? Because I wanted to connect with other people who write. And I was lucky. I feel very lucky to have been accepted into the group and got a place. And I had also already been thinking in my own mind, you know, there's such a dearth of opportunities for English, for people who want to write in the English language in Brussels, in terms of formal workshops and learning the craft and building a community. The Francophone and Dutch speaking communities are very well established naturally because it's Belgium. So, but there was no structure for English language, people wanting to write in English. So obviously, you know, we're sharing the Greek love of wine with our poetry, and often we got talking about these sorts of topics and realized that we had this common idea together within the group. So then we formed, if you like, a subgroup of the co-founders. Not everyone in the Esperance group is a co-founder of the Wordcraft Collective. And we're literally getting it up off the ground now. And we do, in addition to the courses, we have a monthly Grapevine where people can come together and have a drink or a cup of tea and share their frustrations or their opportunities. Mm-hmm. And also once a month we have something called a write together, where each of us in the co-founders will simply sit in a room that we've hired for the purpose, and people who want to write can just come and write with us. And this is a very different kind of connection, because it's not a learning process per se. There's no structured feedback, but it's just to build the community in a sense of writing together. Because I think writers need to be able to write by themselves, but also sometimes it's good to just connect with other people and write from your writerly self, rather than connecting from a professional self or a family self as we do in our everyday work.
So in this write together sessions, so on a practical level, this looks like writers huddle together in a room and writing in silence, or how does this work?
Yeah, we'll provide prompts, either a poetry prompt or a prose prompt, if people want the inspiration, or they could just bring a project that they're working on at the time and be together. And we may have little sharing moments within it if people want to, but it's very much driven by the participants. But Katia is going to be hosting the first one of these later on today, in fact. So would you like to add to that, Katia?
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say after we finish this podcast, I'm off to host our first write together. So yeah, it's exactly as Emma says. So there will be some prompts available so people can come and write, but they can also come with their own project. Basically, the idea is, John, you know, the famous Virginia Woolf quote, to write one needs a room of one's own. Yeah. And, you know, Brussels is a very dense city and people are very busy. I imagine, you know, an aspiring writer living in a house full of kids and animals and just not being able to find her or his moment and quiet corner. And this is where we step in. And this is where, okay, here's the quiet corner. You can come here and work on your writing. And also there's been a proven effect, and I've also experienced it directly, of this kind of a positive peer pressure when you're sitting at a desk surrounded by other people and everybody's typing, or you hear the scribbling of the pen on the page. It does something to you. It's a bit different. So it's a way, exactly as Emma said, to connect with other people, but without directly sharing, more like being united in doing the same activity and feeling this support from knowing that other people are also committed to their craft as much as you are, and just getting drawing inspiration from that.
That's awesome. That's really great. So you're hosting the Write Together workshop later today. And do you expect any new members to show up today? Like, can anyone anytime join the collective or these workshops? Or is the influx of newcomers, has it stopped? Are you more or less a fixed group now?
Well, the plan is to never stop. Let's make the whole city the Warcraft Collective. No, jokes aside, basically also following the logic that anybody who writes is a writer. So anybody who comes to any of our activities is also a member of this writing collective. With a caveat, though, that there is a distinction between paid activities and free activities. So some activities that we offer free and anybody can show up. On our website, we've enabled that people add it to their calendars, but we do not require any kind of formal registration. It's very open in that sense. And then there's a set of paid activities because they entail, you know, labor and some more logistics, and they're more about tutoring. But basically, yes, everybody who shows up is a member of the WordCraft Collective.
And how large is the WordCraft Collective as of now? Like, how many members do you have, active members, let's say?
Well, at the open day, I think we had around 50 people coming to experience our workshops. There was a sort of a buzz, an opening buzz, which was only a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I think we don't have registered membership per se. You know, as Katia said, if you come and take part, then you're a member for that day. If you leave Brussels, then maybe you're not a member anymore. But it's more that we want to build a community of people. And so it's not that people are saying, I'm a member of the WordCraft Collective. It's more a space for people to be able to come together. And while they're with us, while they're taking part, then we are the collective. Mm-hmm. So we don't really want to have this definition of membership and fees and registration and all of that, because it's a more fluid feeling.
Mm-hmm. So how diverse is the collective in terms of, you know, like native speakers, or rather people living in Brussels or expats?
Well, it's as diverse as that original group was, has been, and also as diverse as Brussels is, because there's a mixture of people. Firstly, there are native speakers, obviously. I think mm-hmm. from the open day and from the workshops that we've done so far and seeing who signed up, who has been coming, I would say that native speakers are actually a minority. Mm-hmm. There seems to be more non-native speakers, so people to whom English is their second language and for whatever reason they decide to write in it. And then within those subsection, I would say there are people who, like myself, who write in English but who have really established themselves in Brussels. I've been living in Brussels for 9 years now. And then there's also expats in the sense that they're only kind of passing through. Brussels is I often like to say it's a one gigantic airport. You know, there's a constant turnover of people. And we've had both signing up for our courses and attending the open workshops, people who are only here temporarily and they just want to check in with something that's familiar to them. It's very common when you move to a new city, even if you know it is going to be temporary for a job, for an internship or secondment, that you go and seek out the activities and the communities that feel more yours. Some people go for dancing, some go, you know, for theater. And we've seen people coming for our collective saying up front that I'm only here temporarily, but I want to engage while I am here. And so we're happy then to welcome them. So there's an air of kind of a combination of both permanence and evanescence to it. You know, you know that some people are here to stick around and we're going to build a foundation with them. And you know that others are just kind of satellites, but, you know, we give them what we have and they also give us what they can. And there's some beauty in it as well.
Mm. That's great. So, what role does feedback play in your workshops, and how do you encourage constructive critique and support among members?
So we do the feedbacking exercises only for now in our initial group, the Hope group, the Espérance group. There we try to give very constructive feedback, but we also try to be quite stern with each other. and all of that was started with a caveat that, look, we need to be honest. You know, the goal is to improve ultimately, and, you know, nobody should take it personally. And one important element of the Espérance group that we insisted on when we started it is that the people who are in it stay the same, more or less. So it's there's no option to drop in, you know, to submit your work, get the feedback, and then never appear again. kind of a loyalty is a founding principle of it, and that's what the very good reason for that is, once you establish that kind of friendship and trust from familiarity, it's easier to both give and receive feedback. Because even if you hear something you really did not want to hear, you know it comes from a good place and you take it on board. I myself, I've been with the group for 4 years and I've experienced huge progress, honestly, with my poetry in that sense. And the things that I've published in English, you know, in journals in the States or in the UK came genuinely as a direct consequence of taking on board the feedback that I received from the group. So we try to do the sandwich technique, you know, say what worked, say what didn't work, and then wrap it up with something nice again. It is important to always be honest, because, you know, we take this very seriously. We all want to be better at our craft. So that's why We also want to receive useful feedback.
Yeah.
Now, in the context of the Wordcraft Collective, the feedback plays a very important role in the paid courses. So that we have a course on fiction, on oral storytelling, on memoir writing, and finally on poetry. So the tutors who teach those courses, I'm actually one of them. I'm going to teach the poetry course. We give feedback in that context, in the context of a structured schoolroom, you know, where people are students and there's a teacher and the teacher is teaching them something. It kind of harkens back to a very kind of old school model, but all done in a way that's taking into consideration that, okay, they're only learning something. So you try to dosage that feedback in a way that's gentle and primarily creating a safe space and being being very accepting of everything. You know, you do learn from mistakes, but you have to first accept that they were mistakes and that it's not a big deal if they are. So it's about creating this this space to allow yourself for mistakes that will turn into lessons eventually. And both me and other tutor have a very formal part of the course where feedbacking is actually a thing we teach. So feedbacking as part of editing your work. So you kind of learn to become your own editor as well. And as for the free activities, as we mentioned, that Emma mentioned, so Grapevine and Write Together, for now at the moment, they don't have a feedbacking element simply because they are envisaged as something that anyone can come in and drop in at any time. So it is possible that people will every time meet a completely different group of people. And what lacks there is then this feeling of familiarity in order to actually give each other feedback. So for now, we also want to keep it just on a level of exchange where we're all just giving each other tips and sharing frustrations more than feedbacking directly the work. But we are open to seeing how it goes. If there is a need, if people express a consistent desire to do so, we will look into models of how to incorporate it either in the Write Together or encouraging people to start their own write groups and give them a course on how to start your own writers group so that it kind of spirals into little satellites, satellite beehives from the collective.
Yeah, that's awesome. I really like how you said that. Well, you both mentioned that frustration is a large part of writing. It's a big part of writing, and we all know it. And for me, when I came to the workshops, it was very hard to directly communicate the critique of people whom I just met. So I think it's really important that you build trust and you learn how to communicate directly with people that you might not know. So how has this worked in your experience, Emma, in the collective?
Yeah, I likewise, especially because the Espérance group is such a mixed genre and I had only been writing poetry. So somebody would submit, say, a short story on a Sunday and I'm coming at it with a poet's eyes, thinking, how on earth am I going to give feedback on this prose? So then you look for your own skills, you know, lyricism or description or how the writer is generating emotion. And as Katia mentioned earlier, these can be transferable across the genre. And then it was very nerve-wracking. It still is very nerve-wracking to give feedback in such a way that you're commenting on the work, not commenting on the person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, for me, that's the grounding point. Because it can sometimes feel like you're being commented on as a person when someone's talking about your work.
Yeah.
So I think the key for me is this respectful starting point, that everybody's at different stages, at different levels, has different backgrounds, and wants to achieve different objectives. So in a way, you need to appreciate the diversity of your group. And actually, the group were really supportive of me the first time I was giving feedback because I'd never done that before. And so that was really stepping into the abyss in a way. So that's just as much a part of it, learning how to give feedback as well as learning how to receive it.
For sure. Because oftentimes, yeah, what you mentioned, we confuse our work with our personal issues. I mean, sometimes when we write, for example, poetry, which can be very personal, we take, it happened in workshops. I remember that someone would said that we would criticize a part of a poem, and then the author would say, but this is the way it happened, you know? It's like we're attacking what actually happened. And we would often conclude that, yes, maybe this is how it happened, but it doesn't support the story or the poem. It's not about what really happened, but is the poem really strong? Can it stand on its own? Does it have the literary devices that it needs to be a good work of art? So this is a very delicate skill that I feel I needed to hone for sure. It's kind of therapeutic to actually even, yeah, to kind of tiptoe around maybe the issue or people whom you don't know. It was kind of hard for me in the beginning. But Katja, I'm wondering, since the group is so diverse, is the collective also a place for language exchange and translation?
Thank you, Peter. Actually, before I answer that, I just want to say that I completely share your experience on what you just said. I've had the exact same experience in the group, especially since I mostly write and bring confessional poetry. And then there were definitely places where the group would recognize it instinctively, that, you know, just something doesn't work in the poem, but I was grasping onto it, like, but this is how it happened. I mean, I can't go around it. And then I really had to accept that, yes, that's how it happened. That was a life experience. You know, you accept it, you move on from it. But now the poem is a separate thing. Yeah. You know, the poem is a thing of its own. And then I would make some interventions. And that to me is a beautiful thing about poetry. I once saw somebody's quotes trying to capture, like, what is it even? Is it memoir? Is it fiction? It's always both and never either, in a way. Like, it brings very genuine emotion. You maybe start off from a real event, but then you transform it into what it needs to be as a work of beauty, as a work of truth. So yeah, I just wanted to say that. But so to get back on your question, there is an exchange in the sense that I've noticed in the chat, people spontaneously explain how something works in their culture or how something works in their language, especially if they find themselves writing a sentence that doesn't work grammatically for English, and then they say, oh yeah, but in my language we say this, and that's why this is there. So there's always kind of nice and precious moments. We've had some members also sometimes submit poems where each stanza is written in a different language. So that can be also very beautiful. Well, depending on how many of them you can read and speak, actually. As for translation, I have to say we do not have that element yet, I'm not sure if we're even going to introduce it, because it requires a whole different set of both logistical work and skill sets, and ultimately the goal. What is the goal? We don't feel like the community that we're building has the need for it yet, but let's see what future brings.
Mm-hmm. Emma, would you like to comment on that as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, we're so new and establishing now, and we're very much in the stages to get the courses established, to get the community together, and then when we're in a better place to reach out and to connect with Francophone poets or Dutch speaking poets or German, or the multiple languages that there are in Brussels, then we could, you know, look at those kinds of collaborations. But as Katia said, you know, we need to consolidate first and then see what the opportunities could be.
Do you ever think about performing readings or like connecting with other artists and maybe doing a reading plus musical piece together? I mean, you said that there are 50 people in the collective. If each of them would read a poem, that would be probably a 2-hour program already, maybe.
Well, we're certainly, I mean, there is a speakeasy in Brussels every last Thursday of the month, which I have to say I've never been to, but I've always intended to. And on Monday, we're connecting. Well, this podcast will probably come out after that, but we're connecting with the Something Beautiful Festival on Monday evening to read some poems too. So it'll come. Yeah.
Awesome. So this is like a reading in a cafe, or is it?
The Thursday ones is in a cafe. Yes.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Would you ever consider, Katya, like, okay, you are all amateur writers, more or less. I mean, well, you're established, but would you ever consider about inviting, air quotes, established authors for like a seminar or mentors or something like that? I remember that we had at our one of our poetry collection, poetry workshops, we had each week a different kind of famous poet come and do a short seminar or something like that. Would you be interested in that, or could this be a part of?
Mitya, thank you for the question. We're definitely considering doing something like that. We have to see first how the collective takes off, just from very pragmatic, boring, mm-hmm. non-poetic things, you know, the money, the logistics, the administration, mm-hmm. the taxes, all mm-hmm. of that. But yeah, ultimately, we would like to bring in guests for one-off masterclasses. Mm-hmm. But the courses that we offer for now are courses that you have to sign up for, and then it goes on for a few weeks, 2 months or 3 months. But we would definitely like to be able to fly in guests who will then give workshops or even do one-off events, because it's really easy to come to Brussels. It's, you know, the heart of Europe, as they say. It's in our long-term planning, let's put it that way.
Okay, so you mentioned money, and it begs the question. You said that a writer needs a room of one's own. And again, rooms are expensive, especially in Brussels. How is the collective funded? Like, are all expenses paid for by the subscriptions? How do you fund this?
Well, the co-founders have all made some form of initial investment, whether it's mm-hmm. Putting up the website, for example, and all of our time is also an investment, especially doing the background admin work, and even more so the tutors in preparing the courses and running the courses. And we, as Katya said, there is a subscription charge for the courses, where we hope to recover our costs and be able to pay the tutors. So at that stage, we're sort of at a break-even level. And possibly next year, we would, if all goes well, register as an NGO in Brussels. And then we would be able to look for different forms of funding. But right now, with our informal registration, we don't have that backup. But we're also collaborating with the Poets for the Planet group based in the UK, a European network of eco-poets who are working on the climate crisis. And so hopefully that would expand our network. We'll see.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you are actually making connections with other poetic communities, as you just mentioned. But are you in any way connected or have access to any like publishing houses or magazines? Can people, for example, come to the collective and maybe then find a magazine in which they can publish their work?
I think at this stage, we share opportunities like that amongst us. If we see calls, like this morning, one of our co-founders shared the Miss Lexia poetry competition opportunity with us. So we'll keep it at that for now, because we want to focus on the courses and building up the community, mm-hmm. rather than adding this sort of additional layer.
That's true. Yet. Maybe this is something that is left for the future.
Yeah.
So what future plans or aspirations do you have for the Warcraft Collective? Where would you like to see the collective in a year, 5 years, 10 years?
Oh, wow. Maybe. It's one of those interview questions. Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
In the mirror.
Yeah, you're a little collective baby in 5 years. Well, for now, for the first year, we would like to first build a more stable community. We'd like to see the same faces coming back, you know, for the courses, for the events. Then we would also like to become, obviously, a registered nonprofit organization. And the next steps would be then develop new content and new events, such as one of masterclasses that you yourself also mentioned, and other types of workshops. We also want to keep our, you know, eyes peeled and ears open for what is the need, because that's also part of the reason how we came about to establish it in the first place. So we recognized a need in Brussels, a need for people to meet and talk about their writing and to learn something, to a place where they can learn. So I would say that one of the bases behind the collective is to give courses. It's a very, very rare thing to find, you know, English speaking courses in a country that's not English speaking and that is this diverse. Brussels is the second most diverse city in the world after Dubai. So, So I would say it's hard to imagine what it will be in 10 years because we're also very, you know, open to keep with Emma's notion of fluidity. We're kind of fluid in the way that we will be what it needs to be, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Both from where it's starting now and what the city needs.
Mm-hmm. And now turning to we're drawing to a close slowly, but how important is also the socializing after the workshops? Do we ever go like to a bar and then maybe, you know, talk about not strictly poetry, but kind of just, you know, getting to know each other and stuff like that to build the trust needed to kind of give better feedback in the end? How important is this for you? I mean, for us, we always went for beers after that. And many, many interesting friendships and opportunities sprung up from that. So do you have a similar experience here?
I just wanted to add on to Katia's, you know, sort of future plan, which segues nicely into answering that question as well, because as much as this is about community, it's also about building friendships and it's also about having fun. And I think for me, the key indicator is if we stop having fun in the WordCraft Collective, then we shouldn't be doing it anymore. To be completely honest, we're transparent with you, Mitya, the Esperance meets in a bar every couple of weeks. So we don't need to wait for after the workshop for our drinks. And the group has also been going on retreats together, which helps to build up friendships amongst the group. Mm. So, and I think we had mooted the idea, although the future plans are not clarified yet, but we may well also offer retreats amongst the WordCraft community.
That's wonderfully said. If it's not fun, that then it should. Yeah, if it's not fun, then it shouldn't be done. Probably. I mean, this should be at the heart of everything. I feel because we mentioned the frustration in writing and so on and. The friendships in the end are really what matter, who you spend your time with. And so thank you again for joining me. So this was the Verzopolis podcast, episode 9, Poetry Communities with Emma Woodford and Katia Knežević. Thank you for listening.